Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's July 30th, currently 61 degrees in Old Town Park City, 60 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, new meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It's great to be with you this morning. Hopefully everyone's having a great Tuesday to start. I'll tell you what, we're looking at temperatures climbing as we go throughout the day, but the numbers are actually going to be at are slightly below average for this time of the year. So we're forecasting high temperatures to climb into the mid-80s around Park City, highs only around 90 in the Heber Valley. But we do want to let you know that we're going to continue to see those winds out of the south and west, and that's going to blow in some of that smoke and haze as we go into the midday time frame and early afternoon. So air quality will likely go down as we go into the afternoon hours. We do have a code orange that is unhealthy for sensitive groups. So if you suffer from respiratory issues like asthma, things like that, just make sure that you're taking it easy. Try to avoid being outside for long periods of time as we go throughout the afternoon hours. The other issue, of course, is with the breezy conditions, the very dry conditions we have in place, that's going to give us that elevated fire danger. So we do have that red flag warning in effect. That just basically means any sparks that get going could likely spread very easily. We've got a lot of fuel and vegetation out there, so be aware of that. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, we're looking at more of the same. Highs climbing into the mid to upper 80s around Park City. Highs climbing to around the low 90s as we get into the Heber Valley. But again, we're looking at that kind of hazy sunshine expected across the area. These temperatures remaining at or below average as we go throughout the middle of the week. But then we do have some changes heading our way as we get towards your Thursday. That sunshine turns into some hot sunshine as our heat dome begins to build back in across the area. So guess what that means? That means temperatures, even for Park City, climbing into the 90s for highs. And in the Heber Valley, we're going to be looking at those highs into the mid to upper 90s, approaching the triple digits as we get towards the weekend. So if you thought we were cooling off for a while, we did get a little break from the major heat, but it is going to be returning as we head towards the end of the week and into the weekend. And then notice as we go into next week, we're going to remain on the warm side. We may add a few extra clouds and maybe a couple of isolated showers with some monsoonal moisture as we get towards, let's say, next Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. But if we don't see that, it's going to remain on the hot side as that dangerous heat begins to build back in across the area. In fact, some places across the state will likely approach record high temperatures again as we get towards the upcoming weekend. So, yes, we'll take the average to below average temperatures today and tomorrow, although we'll have to do that with some of that smoke and haze because hot temperatures will be returning. So if you're making any plans to do any recreational activities as we go into this weekend, Leslie, just prepare for the heat. Make sure you're staying hydrated. Avoid long periods of time outside. And of course, don't forget that sunscreen, SPF 30 or greater, or you could burn in less than 15 minutes. No one wants to do that.
Yeah. And again, it's the 55th annual Park City Kimball Art Festival this weekend. Uh-huh. So that's good news with no rain. So
Yes.
But it's still hot.
But that heat, yes. Oh, yes. So no rain, but just make sure you're taking those heat precautions because, it can get a little dangerous out there.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. We'll take a look at Wednesday's County Council agenda. Later on, Willie Ford is the new CEO of the National Ability Center. He'll be introducing himself and talk a little bit about his vision for the organization. Finally, Park City Restaurant Association Executive Director Ginger Wicks has details about the 4 days of local restaurants and spirit companies presenting at the prestigious James Beard House in New York City and how you can get tickets to join in. Well, an internationally known lifestyle influencer family wants to start a store just outside of Camas. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that they have been asked to be within city limits as well.
The petition seeks to annex a 14-acre parcel of land on the south side of 248, west of Camas. It's owned by Daniel and Hannah Nealman, the family better known as Ballerina Farm on social media. They've garnered an international audience of followers interested in their pastoral lifestyle in the Camas Valley. They have a farm on North Democrat Alley, but hope to build a store and creamery on the main road into town. It could also include a garden, orchard, livestock facilities, or event center. The Nealmans secured signatures from 5 landowners between themselves and the existing city boundary. Those landowners, which include the Ewer Brothers and Francis City, would be annexed as well. At the Camas City Council's June 25th meeting, Mayor Matt McCormick explains accepting the Nealmans annexation petition triggers a lengthy review process.
Separate site plan approval from Planning Commission on the creamery will happen after annexation once zoning has been set.
Before annexation can happen, city, county, and state staff will make sure it complies with the law. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is involved too, ensuring Camas Valley's wetlands stay protected. The process culminates in a public hearing, after which the city council votes yes or no on annexing the land and the five parcels in between. There was a sixth parcel up for consideration. Daniel Neilman says the landowner was concerned whether his taxes would go up were he included.
You know, he's on a budget, he's retired, and I just think right now he didn't feel comfortable jumping in.
But the other five parcels work around the landowner. Mayor McCormick anticipates more discussion about whether that landowner's absence is a reason to deny annexation entirely. There may also be more discussion about Hallam Road, which Francis City may extend north to State Route 248. It would border the Neilman's Creamery and store. June 25th, council members discussed whether Camas City would pay to maintain that road, but costs could be offset by the additional tax revenue from the annexed land. Then they unanimously voted to accept Ballerina Farm's petition for annexation. The farm gets its name from Hannah Neilman's career as a dancer. She also competes in pageants, has eight kids with Daniel, and has been profiled by national and international media. Most recently, the family was the subject of a story in The Times, the United Kingdom's oldest newspaper. Camas City pursued annexation west of town 2 years ago, so it could have a say in future development. But feedback at the time was mixed. The Ballerina Farm annexation is smaller than the 2022 proposal. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council meets Wednesday with a work session to interview applicants for the North Summit Recreation Special Service District. That before going into closed session, then reopening work session at about 4 o'clock. In the studio now with a meeting preview is Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, let's start with basically just fires. Had certainly a handful in Summit County. Is this taxing the resources of the county as well as the fire districts?
It absolutely is. I was in a meeting yesterday with our communications director, Derek Sidaway, who got up immediately and took a phone call and left and texted me later and said, there's a fire off of 248 that's threatening structures. So I know you all heard about that one. Last week was a lot with the fire out by Hennifer. We had a lot of help with that one, and we were very grateful for that. We had to arrange where they were going to stay and where they're going to sleep, and I was on the phone till the wee hours of the night on Thursday night. So we put off some of the fair preparations because we had people sleeping at the ledges. There's just a ripple effect of a fire like that that takes not only our fire resources but communications, emergency management. And then in this case, it even affected the fair. So very, really challenging time right now and too many fires popping up.
Yeah, so do you have a line item in the budget to take care of fires?
We do. And of course, it follows the first responders are always these different fire districts. We have an agenda item on this agenda for tomorrow to partner with them in a mutual aid agreement with Uinta County in Wyoming on some fire responding. If they can get there first, what does that look like financially? So those are all financial line items that we have to worry about. We have 1,800 square miles of county. It came from a city of 10 square miles, so much harder to manage in this regard.
Yeah. How does it work to do a mutual aid agreement, as you mentioned, with Uinta County Wyoming Fire Protection Board? I mean, when you start straddling state lines.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a challenge because we are trying to recognize when they are the first responders, what does that mean for them financially, and how can we help compensate them when they come to our side of the line? That works both ways. In the interest of full disclosure, we rarely are the first ones to respond to Wyoming. They often will respond to I-80 on the just over the Wyoming-Utah side. They'll be the first ones there. So we've gone back and forth on what that compensation should look like and have negotiated what I think are fair terms, and they'll send us an invoice when they actually respond.
Okay. Also want to note that property tax notices were mailed. The deadline for Summit County to finish last year's appeals of taxes is tomorrow. So the county hasn't finished last year's appeal, but yet sent out new notices?
We have. We have an agenda item tomorrow for the Board of Equalization. I think it said in the staff report this is the last appeal of the year. We had a record number of appeals this year and had a hard time getting to all of them. Cindy and her office did a wonderful job, but we are hopeful that we'll get many, many less appeals. I think the values have gone up, but they haven't gone up in the drastic ways they've gone up the last 2 years. So we're hoping there was a course correction there that we're going to be able to take advantage of this year.
So the appeals will be completed before property owners could file a new appeal.
That's right.
Yeah. And does that mean that I would have to start paying any higher property taxes while I'm waiting to hear about an appeal?
Yeah, it's my understanding that is how it works, that you do pay the higher amount, and then when the appeal is granted, those are reversed back to when they were filed.
Yeah. Now, is the county's portion of the property tax bill going up?
No, for 25, not yet. We haven't decided to go through truth and taxation. I think we've had some council members voice their opinion about that, and in reference to the emergency services sales tax. So, but that's probably still to be determined.
So how does that work? So the property taxes that are paid in November every year, that's what pays the following year budget?
Yes.
Or are you a year behind?
We are actually a year behind. Municipalities run on the July 1 to June 30. So if Park City, for example, would have gone through truth and taxation, we would know what they would have set that new certified tax rate. Those taxes in November would have been paid for that new certified tax rate. For us, we run a year behind because we set the rate, but we don't know if we've gone through truth and taxation at this time.
Well, what we've heard is that you're about 18 million below.
I've never heard 18. Oh. But honestly, we still don't know. It's all speculation at this point still, but we are just barely starting to ramp up the budget process and should know more soon.
So what if that sales tax proposal, that also on the agenda for tomorrow's agenda, what if that sales tax proposal doesn't get approved at the ballot in November? Do you go forward with what you've got and then just make do until the following year?
That's one option. If we don't go through truth and taxation, that's what we'd have to do. We can always plug ongoing new expenses with one-time funds in a kind of a stopgap measure, sort of like we did last year. We're talking about big numbers, though, Leslie. $15 million, if that's true, if that's really what the budget gap is, we will receive more, likely, we'll have more sales tax revenue. We usually have year over year, we have more revenue. So there are things like that can work in our favor in capturing more revenue to offset that, and we'd have to cut drastically. But the items that are coming up have been mostly priorities of the county, priorities of the council, and also have been some things that have been asked for us to take on from the legislature, for example, things that we may not have a choice in taking on. So truth and taxation is still something that I'm contemplating as far as proposal goes. Ultimately, the council will decide whether to do that or not. I've got a lot of hope and faith in that emergency services sales tax. I think it's going to be a good thing. I think it's going to tick a lot of boxes and pay for a lot of good things.
All right. Now, as we mentioned, the Board of Equalization is set to finish their appeals by Wednesday. And after all was said and done, it looks like the property was overvalued by only just over $2 million. I mean, again, when people filed those appeals, it was $2 million against what the county had done.
Yeah.
And I guess it just seems like a lot of work to have just a $2 million, deficit there on the budget. I mean, how do you handle that? I mean, can you just lighten up the values a touch so that people don't file these appeals? I mean, was it worth it?
Well, there's a specific way that we go about evaluating property and assessing property in Utah, and we're following that way. And that's done by code, by state, not code. Not, it's not a choice we have, and it's. I think it's important for one person to be evaluated fairly, just like it is another. To lighten up a load on one person arbitrarily is hurting the person next to them. So we're trying to do. I think the $2 million number shows you that while these values are increasing, the values that we're capturing, that we're reflecting, are pretty accurate. And Values are going up. That's a real challenge for everybody. As that happens, as we do raise taxes, it hurts everybody. But I don't. When you go to sell your property, I venture almost 99 times out of 100, if you want to sell your property, you're able to sell it for what the county is assessing your property at, and that's just the truth of the matter. And that's what we, our comparables are our sales and purchases. So. It's a real challenging situation, and one that we certainly don't want to price folks out of their homes just because they're raising taxes. But we have a pretty nice place to live, and supply and demand's driving our prices way up.
Yeah, as I mentioned, there is the ballot language for the emergency service sales tax that the council will vote on. Sounds like you've got the bond language ready for approval.
Well, I think we do, and we talked about that, I think, 2 weeks ago, and they seem very favorable to that language.
The language says now up to 1%, because we've been talking about just 0.5%. So is that the intent of the council?
Yes, the intent is still 0.5%.
Well, but then why do we have 1% in the bond language?
Well, because you can go up to 1%.
Right. So why? But I guess just why not? If the intent is just to go 0.5%, why not just put that 0.5% on so that voters know that it's a set amount? I mean, are you running a risk here by saying up to 1%?
I think as far as the proposal goes, we wanted to put everything on the table. I think the council still has that ability to go up to the 0.5%. And I can't speak for them, but what I have heard is that is their intent to just go to the 0.5%. So if we did ever go over the 0.5%, we'd have to go back to the ballot. So the intent would be on the ballot language to just have the 0.5%. But again, the council can go up to 1%, so they have the ability to do that if they'd like to.
Okay, but I'm just saying that's what the council is approving on Wednesday, and it does say up to 1%.
Yes. So I think they could take the action to say, for example, I make a motion that we approve the ballot language as proposed up to only 0.5%.
Okay. All right, let's see. Back to the agenda real quick, a half-hour conversation or so on our so-called civic health. This is a presentation from Deputy Health Director Kendra Babbitts. It was interesting to see the map and the packet showing the farther away you live from Washington, D.C., the longer you live. Here in Utah, the average life expectancy, almost 80 years. In Summit County, 5 years longer. And in fact, I think Summit County considered the healthiest place to live in the entire state of Utah.
That's exactly right, and that's exciting. Something we absolutely want to celebrate. What I found interesting in the packet for this this presentation tomorrow was the idea of civic health. It's probably something that's been in the background of my mind. I've been reading recently that the relationships we have with other people is such a predictor of longevity and other health outcomes, and that's part of civic health. It's access to education, it's access to transportation, it's our social connectedness. So those are factors that we're now measuring and that we do pretty well with here in Summit County, and I think that's something to celebrate.
All right, and then meeting as the Board of Mountain Regional Water Special Service District, the County Council will be asked to approve a list of liens for past due fees and charges. Liens are filed on a property deed, right?
Right.
Yeah, and there's about 50 of this. So you go ahead and file a lien, but you don't threaten to turn off water?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. That would be what as someone who worked for a municipality, that's what we would do when the water bill wasn't paid. We could threaten to turn it off water or power or whatever the service was. So I had that same question for Andy. I think it was 46 of these past due amounts, most of them which my understanding is they were credit cards that had expired, and so a lot of them are mistakes. So I think we don't want to be extremely aggressive with this, and probably turning off water is also a health and safety issue when you don't have water, clean water to drink. But yeah, we'd like to get the attention of some folks and get these past dues paid.
Yeah, and I guess the most expensive personal bill due and owing I saw was about $3,800. Most of them are just for a few hundred dollars.
That's right.
So that's like 1 month in arrears.
That's exactly right. So we're just trying to, I think it's another way to get people's attention.
Okay. I guess I just hadn't seen this before on the agenda like that. It looked like a bunch of them were also for a single developer in Silver Creek Village. And it's probably for homes that haven't sold. So if does this all come out in the wash then at closing if they do get sold? I mean, that seems like having a lien on a piece of property before it's purchased could be troublesome.
That, to me, that's what the lien's purpose is if it does get sold, it has to be accounted for in the sale of the property.
Okay. And then two public hearings on both the East Side and Snyderville Basin Development Codes. Anything about these hearings that residents ought to know?
Well, I don't think so. The council took action on this same agenda item that had to be done by, I think it was February 1st, and so in January they took action, but it was temporary at that time. So this is kind of to formalize that action. This is done as a result of Senate Bill 174, I believe, that we're just trying to come into compliance with that Senate bill.
So. Okay. Pat Putt retires as of the end of day tomorrow. Desk cleaned out? Are you ready to go?
I think he is. I think he's got mixed feelings, but I think he is ready to go, and hopefully he's as excited as he is saying he is. We're obviously going to miss him so much, and I just would like to thank him for his, what I understand is 12 years of service here in Summit County, and longest serving community development director in our history, and there is no replacing Pat Putt. Peter Barnes will do a wonderful job, and has a lot of skills, and I'm excited about for Peter and about Peter, but there's no difference. There's no two Pat Putts.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Summit County Fair starts on Saturday, goes through the next weekend. We're very excited about that. I think the Derby is the first event there on August 3rd, and our nonprofit grant deadline is tomorrow. So if you have a nonprofit grant request, please get that in before the end of day tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a great day.
That's Shane Scott, Summit County Manager. The National Ability Center has announced that it has appointed Willie Ford as its new CEO. He replaces former CEO Dan Glasser, who left last fall. Good morning, Willie, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks.
First, tell us a little bit about yourself and why this was a job that you wanted to do.
I've been in the Park City community now for over 10 years. Moved out in 2012 when Black Diamond Equipment acquired Pock. Pock is a well-known helmet and protection company in the ski and bike industry. And at the time, I was leading the North American division. And I knew that this was an opportunity for me at the National Ability Center to combine my experiences of leading for-profit companies and serving on nonprofit boards. Over the last 6 to 8 years, I've served on the board of the High Fives Foundation, which is out of Truckee, California, with a similar mission. Gets people back on their feet after life-altering injuries. And that work was incredibly rewarding, inspiring. And I knew that I left POC in 2019. I started a tech company after that. And I knew that whatever I did next was going to be impact-oriented. My wife, our dog, and our 19-month-old son, we walk in Round Valley often, and I've said to Caroline many times that if the position ever opened up at the NAC to lead that organization, I want to put my name in the ring. So here we are.
Yeah, I was going to mention that because there's a video that was attached to your announcement, and you did say that if this job ever opened, you wanted it. I mean, why was that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's rooted in the fact that I grew up on a small campus in on a private school in New Hampshire called Holderness. My parents have been teachers there since 1993. So we've had a dorm attached to our house for as long as I can remember. We had three meeting points a day as a family, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the dining hall. And having that time on a campus, being connected to a community that we cared so much about, I've always kind of known that eventually in my career in life, I would be associated to something similar. And here in the Park City area, there's nothing more similar to that than the National Ability Center. Our campuses are amazing. Our team is incredible. And the thing that inspires me the most are the participants that come every day. And the families that are connected to those participants are truly amazing people.
Yeah, do you have a personal connection to anyone at the NAC?
I don't have a personal connection. But I have lots of friends and acquaintances that have been affected with some type of disability and have gone through the NAC's programming, and the impact that they've had on these people's lives is amazing.
Yeah, certainly one of the main jobs of a CEO of a nonprofit is to raise money to sustain the organization. It sounds like much of your work has been in the outdoor and for-profit industry. So how do Yeah. What kind of direction do you take there?
My last job prior to the National Ability Center was I was the CEO and founder of a tech startup, GiveGo, and we were a venture-backed technology company, and we raised money to bring that idea to life. Raising money in venture and through angels is hard. It's a lot different than raising money for a nonprofit, but there are also similarities. What I would say about raising money for the NAC now and into the future is that we've been around for 40 years, and the next 40 years is going to be as exciting, if not more exciting, than the first. We have an incredible development team led by Caitlin, and, you know, the way we're going to raise money and continue to grow our organization is by providing more impact to more people in more places. And if we stay true to that vision, raising funds will come with it.
Yeah. So in terms of some of those activities, I mean, it started out as, right, as a winter kind of sports organization, and now year-round. What are some of the summer sports that you have?
We now have a presence down in Moab, so rafting is becoming a big summer activity. We have over 300 bikes in our fleet out at the ranch, our headquarters out in Round Valley. We have a range of programming on campus, from our challenge course. We have a 12-horse herd. Equestrian is a big program that we're really proud of, that makes an incredible impact for the participants that go through it. We have archery. So we have 20 different programming options that we offer throughout the year.
Yeah, and how many people do you see come through on a regular Sunday?
Between 5,000 and 6,000 annually, and we provide 30,000 different programs.
Wow. All right, and as I think you mentioned, the rafting, that was with the merger with Splore in Moab. Are there any other opportunities out there like that in Utah?
You know, it's day 12 on the job for me. I think that we're going to be looking at this. The opportunity that I really care about is, how do we increase our awareness so that we can extend our reach and impact? And that's, you know, if there's opportunities like Splore and what we did down in Moab, we'll definitely consider it.
All right. So you just started this month, yeah?
Yeah, today's day 12.
Okay. All right. And I guess maybe in terms of the future of the NAC, I mean, is it built out at this point? I mean, is there more room for expansion?
So like I said, we help between 5,000 and 6,000 individuals on an annual basis, yet there's 40 million people in the United States of America living with a disability. Our opportunity is huge, but I think that our responsibility is even greater. Our responsibility to make sure that if you live in the United States and you have a disability, you at least know about us, that we can inspire you, that we can help you get outside of your comfort zone, potentially before you ever come to any of our properties. And hopefully with time, you come and immerse yourself in our programming and you find the inspiration, confidence, and positive energy you need to kind of live a fulfilled life.
Well, now with the East Village expansion of Deer Valley there, of course we've got the 100 rooms there at the Grand Hyatt specifically for military, and I know you guys do a lot of work with the Wounded Warrior program. Do you expect to see some growth as a result of that as well?
Definitely, yeah, and we really hope that that's going to be, that they're going to be a great partner of ours. One of our challenges as we have big groups come into town is accessible rooms and affordability of those rooms. We have a 26-room lodge at our, at the ranch, our headquarters, which has been incredible and helpful to bring groups and provide accommodations for our participants with disabilities. But, you know, this partnership that you mentioned is something that we have on our radar for sure.
Yeah. So you are fully built out there at the ranch? Yeah,
I wouldn't use the word fully, but we have an incredible equestrian center. We have this new building, the Hub, which is has some wonderful rock climbing opportunity in it, along with some indoor pickleball for a rainy day. We have the lodge, we have the challenge course. So we have an incredible facility that, if you're in town and ever want to come by for a tour or come to any of our events like Summit Challenge, which is happening on August 24th, please come and see what we do firsthand. I can talk about it all day, but you don't understand the impact that the NAC is offering until you come and see it for yourself.
Okay. Anything else, Will, you'd like to tell us?
We're excited for the next 40 years. We turn 40 this fall, so we hope that if you're around, you'll get involved. We had, last year, we had over 1,000 volunteers who donated over 12,000 hours. If you don't have the financial means to contribute, come and be a volunteer. If you can do both, great. All I really care about is that you come and be part of what we're doing.
Okay. Again, congratulations, Willie.
Thanks. Have a good day.
That's Willie Ford, again, the new CEO for National Ability Center. Well, Madeline Smith, known for her decades-long involvement in the Park City community, has died. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on her life.
Madeline Smith, known as Marty, died over the weekend in an assisted living facility in Heber. She was 82. A cause of death was not immediately available. Friends describe Smith as an iconic figure in the Park City community in the 1970s and 80s. Jim Lee, her friend of nearly 50 years, says Smith was one of the first people he met when he moved to Park City in 1975. They were neighbors and co-workers.
Everyone really knew everyone in the 70s. You lived with your co-workers. You saw them at the supermarket all the time. And just a true small town.
Lee says Smith was unfailingly optimistic.
She really had an incredible sense of humor and was always joking around. She never lost that humor under any circumstance. Always upbeat, very positive.
She was also an avid participant in community theater. Randy Barton, executive director of the Egyptian Theater, remembers performing alongside her in Fiddler on the Roof.
Marty Madeline was kind of our big star. So she starred in a lot of the early productions in the late 70s and early 80s and was very instrumental with the metamorphosis of theater in town.
Smith's college sweetheart, basketball star Lou Hudson, moved to Park City in 1984 to marry her. The couple was heavily involved in the community throughout their lives. A fall about 20 years ago left Smith paralyzed, and she remained in a wheelchair until her death. Lee says her friends and neighbors stepped up to help care for her.
She had so many friends that she drew from that pool of friends to help her out under her circumstances. It took a village to help her.
Barton says Smith was a beloved figure in Park City's arts community.
Park City always prides itself on its recreation, of course, but there's a whole other world of arts and culture, of musicians and actors and dancers and poets and writers, and you know, Madeline occupied that space well, was one of our heroes.
Details about a memorial service have not yet been announced. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, a Utah man was arrested on Highway 40 in Summit County Friday afternoon after a suspected road rage incident. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
According to an arrest affidavit, a man driving a gray Tesla near the intersection of Interstate 80 and Highway 40 brandished a handgun at another driver during an alleged road rage incident Friday afternoon. Both the driver of the Tesla and the other driver told police that a road rage incident occurred where the lanes merge, according to the arrest document filed by a deputy with the Summit County Jail. The incident was reported at about 1 p.m. in a 911 call to dispatchers with the Summit County Sheriff's Office. A Utah Highway Patrol officer responded and pulled over the Tesla on Highway 40. The Tesla driver denied brandishing a firearm, but police did find a black Glock 43 9mm gun that was within his reach in the glove box. The driver was arrested on suspicion of threatening with a dangerous weapon in a fight, which is a Class A misdemeanor. He was later released under his own recognizance. Class A misdemeanors can carry a punishment of up to a year in jail and a fine up to $2,500. Charges have not been filed against the driver as of Monday afternoon. After seeing an increase in incidents across the state this year, the Utah legislature passed a bill increasing penalties and fines for road rage. That law went into effect on July 1st. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And firefighters have stopped the progress of the brush fire that started yesterday west of Camas. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that it is no longer threatening any homes.
The Murdoch Hollow fire was 60% contained as of 3:30 in the afternoon Monday. It grew to 20 acres after sparking north of 248 around 10:30 in the morning, but Summit County reports it was 4.5 acres by the afternoon. Witnesses say smoke had abated as well. One westbound lane of State Route 248 closed as crews worked to contain the blaze. Summit County spokesperson Derek Sidaway says no injuries were reported Monday afternoon.
There were several structures threatened, but no evacuations at this time, and no evacuations are anticipated.
The fire began north of State Route 248, between mileposts 10 and 11. A resident near the fire, Lindy Sternlight, told KPCW both helicopters and planes were in the area, dropping water and retardant. She says members of the Garf Ranch's Homeowners Association had been communicating and working with one another.
Garf Ranch said that if we do evacuate, large animals can go over to their HQ.
Sternlight had not been ordered to evacuate as of noon Monday and estimated her home was a mile from the fire. The cause is under investigation. A red flag warning is also in effect for much of Utah. Through 10 p.m. Tuesday, more than 80 wildfires have sparked across the state since July 21st. 44% of those were human-caused, says Utah Fire Info. The Murdoch Hollow fire comes a day after crews fully contained the Dicker Hill fire in northern Summit County. That burned 360 acres. Two smaller fires also sparked in Summit County over the weekend, a 1,600-square-foot fire beneath Payday Lift that was out by Sunday evening, and then the 10-acre fire in Browns Canyon that began earlier in the day. Crews have stopped the forward progress of the Browns Canyon fire and are investigating the cause as well. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, tickets are on sale now for the James Spirit Foundation events featuring Park City chefs and spirit companies this September in New York City. In the studio with details is the executive director of the Park City Restaurant Association, Ginger Wicks. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, maybe can you tell us what the James Beard Foundation is?
Yes. So the James Beard Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's based in New York City, and they opened a new venue in last September called the Platform at Pier 57. And we are excited to be able to partner with them and host a variety of our distinguished chefs this September for some very unique dining experiences.
Okay, so before we talk about those specific restaurants and spirit companies mm-hmm. going, how does something like this happen? I mean, does mm-hmm. the foundation have to invite you?
A little bit of both. We've had a long-standing relationship with the James Beard Foundation. We were invited to go to the James Beard House, which is also located in New York City, in the fall of 2019. And we took, again, a variety of chefs who did a culinary dinner there. All the chefs worked together, and it was such a unique experience. So you definitely have to be a top chef. One of the board members of the Restaurant Association would describe the James Beard Foundation as like the Oscars of culinary dining. So we have a longstanding relationship with them. And when this venue was coming online, we had been discussing, you know, possibly collaborating again. And they suggested this idea.
Okay, so there are 5 events over 4 days.
Correct.
So let's go kind of run through them. I mean, who's going?
Okay, so kicking us off would be co-owner and executive chef Seth Adams from River Horse on Main. He will be working with master botanical distiller Sarah Sargent from Alpine Distilling, and they'll be kicking us off with a dinner on Thursday the 26th.
Of September.
And then the next day we have High West Distillery, and as well as their food and beverage team. So their executive chef, Michael Showers, and their spirits division will host a very unique cocktail party on Friday the 27th of September. And then we roll into Saturday, September 28th, we have executive chef Clement Galles from Courchevel Bistro. Again, he'll be partnered with Sarah Sargent from Alpine Distilling. They'll be hosting a lunch. Then that evening, we will have co-owner and executive chef Matthew Harris, again partnered with Alpine Distilling, to host a dinner. And then closing out the events in New York City on Sunday, September 29th, Executive or Vice President of Food and Beverage Operations and Corporate Chef Zane Holmquist, again with Alpine Distilling, and his culinary team will host a brunch.
Okay. And tickets are available to each of those.
Yes. So tickets are on sale. You can go to platformbyjbf.org and go to the events page, and you'll see all their events that happen at the platform throughout the summer and into our events in the fall. Anyone can purchase tickets.
Yeah. So I remember when a chef went to cook at the James Beard House, they had to bring everything with them on the airplane. Is this going to be a little bit different where they're going to be able to get their produce and food at, you know, on site?
It's a combination of both. Our chefs are creating such unique experiences that some of the items, yes, they are going to have to bring with them on the plane. But the James Beard team at the platform is working diligently to help source whatever ingredients they need now to have it there at the platform for them. But so it is a little bit of both. So it's a big effort to get everything we need there and then produce these events.
Yeah. So how were these particular businesses chosen to go?
So we applied for a Summit County Restaurant Tax Grant to create this week experience in New York City, and we were fortunate to be awarded that. And so from there, we sent out an RFP. Any restaurant member of our association was welcome to submit an RFP to be a part of this unique event. We formed a selection committee that people from Utah Office of Tourism and the Park City Chamber Bureau, they came together and selected the chefs that would be going to New York City with us.
So was that just done on paper, or did they actually have to prepare something for you to taste test?
It was all done on paper, and we had about 12 RFPs submitted to go, and it took the selection committee over 2 days to kind of comb through everything. It was a very hard decision because we have some very amazing chefs in our community. So then they narrowed it down to the chefs that have been selected that we just reviewed.
Yeah, and so the people who buy tickets, I mean, does it really expose Park City's gastronomy to the world or those of New York, or is it a lot of just friends and family that want to be part of it?
No, I would say it absolutely exposes our culinary efforts and all that we have to offer to the New York scene. Kicking off this event is a private media-only event that will happen on Wednesday, and so we're inviting about 100 media to come and do a showcase of what will be offered throughout the week. And so that kicks off on Wednesday, but again, that's a private event. And then in addition, while we're there, we're working with Condé Nast and giving some of the chefs exposure there. We're just starting to have conversations with the Today Show. So we're trying to really maximize our time and really put Park City's culinary scene in the forefront of everyone's minds.
Okay. Tickets aren't crazy. I mean, there are some more expensive, but I mean, they started about $100, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, $100 and go up from there. Again, this is a very unique experience. You'll get interaction with the chefs at the dinner. And so kind of a fun way to, again, share the news about all that we have to offer in terms of our culinary scene here in Park City.
Okay, got some time left. Anything you want to tell us about? Of course, we've got the big, as the executive director of the Historic Park City Alliance as well, we've got Arts Festival happening. What do people need to know about that?
Yes, Arts Festival is happening this weekend. If you need to understand road closures and where to park, the Park City Municipal has all that information on their website. Of course, carpool, used public transportation. That's just going to make it the most enjoyable for you to come and enjoy the Arts Festival. Trying to come and park your car just is going to be painful. So please, please, please park at Richardson Flat, ride the shuttles in, have a wonderful weekend. It's going to be hot. So Park City's the place you want to be to get out of those temperatures that are going to be in the valley.
So tell us about, in just in terms of what kind of summer season Main Street's had.
I would say the summer season started off very slow. And it seems to be picking up, but it was definitely a slow start. Obviously, we had construction going on, but I don't think that really played into the slow season. Everyone that I talked to really was hurting in the spring months. And I don't know why that is, but I think even the trends that like the Chamber Bureau was reporting in terms of lodging definitely were down this spring.
Okay. Anything else you want to let people know?
I guess what I would end on is the Park City Cocktail Contest ends tomorrow. So if you have not gotten out and sampled all the amazing drinks that our bartenders and mixologists have created, please do so. It's a fun way to support businesses and get refreshed at the same time.
Okay. And again, we'll have the winners of both the cocktail and mocktail contest on Thursday morning.
Yes. Okay. So that'll be exciting.
All right. Ginger, thanks for your time this
morning. Thank you.
Ginger Wicks is the executive director of the Park City Restaurant Association, as well as the Historic Park City Alliance. Public defender Sean Howell has been appointed as the 4th District Court's newest judge. KPCW's Grace Dorfley reports she now needs confirmation by the Utah Senate.
Howell was selected from a field of 5 nominees to fill a vacancy in 4th District Court, which covers Wasatch, Utah, Juab, and Millard counties. Governor Spencer Cox announced the appointment on Friday. If confirmed by the Utah Senate, Howell will fill the vacancy left by Judge Robert Lund when he retires in January. In a press release, Cox said, quote, Sean's dedication and knowledge will serve Utahns in the 4th District Court well. Howell is currently a senior trial attorney at the Utah County Public Defenders Association. Prior to her career in public defense, she served as a law clerk in the 4th District Court, specializing in domestic and civil matters. She's also coached law students on advocacy and courtroom procedures, and she served the Utah State Bar as a mentor to new lawyers. Howell is a graduate of the University of Utah's J. Reuben Clark Law School, Brigham Young University, and the Department of Corrections Fred House Training Academy. Howell said in a statement she is honored to serve the community as a judge. She was not immediately available for comments Monday. Grace Torfler, KPCW News.
Well, a Jackson Hole Mountain Resort employee recently completed a decades-long journey to visit every ski lift on the continent. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
Peter Landsman is a lift supervisor at Jackson Hole and in his free time runs a website called Lift Blog, where he documents aerial transportation across the world. Landsman recently finished his goal of visiting every chairlift, gondola, and aerial tramway in North America. It involved visiting every ski area on the continent as well as other locations.
So Lagoon there in Utah, the water park and amusement park has a chairlift that just goes completely flat across the park. Increasingly, gondolas are being used for public transportation. So like in Portland, Oregon, there's an aerial tram that goes from a kind of a waterfront neighborhood up to a hospital, and that's used for public transit. So there are a lot of different uses for chairlifts and gondolas other than just skiing.
In total, Landsman has visited nearly 3,000 lifts. He wasn't able to ride all of them.
There are a few lifts that sometimes don't operate very often. Like, for example, on Park City Mountain, some of the listeners may know about Eaglet, which is a little chairlift used for the Olympics in 2002 that very rarely operates. So occasionally there's a lift that I just have to kind of ski under or hike up to visit and count that as riding.
Landsman says his favorite thing about lifts is they are all unique.
Every single lift is designed for a specific place on a specific mountain. One that stands out technologically is called the Peak to Peak Gondola, which is up at Whistler Blackcomb in British Columbia. And it's the only 3S gondola in North America currently. So it's got 3 different cables and it goes between 2 mountains. And the highest point, it's 1,400 feet in the air. So it's a very unique lift, particularly for North America, and probably my personal favorite.
Landsman says he's excited to return to Utah soon. Many of the state's ski areas, including Park City Mountain and Deer Valley Resort, have new lifts under construction that he will have to add to his list.
Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And the Park City Senior Center's membership has grown by 500 in the last 5 years, and they're quickly running out of room at their Old Town location. Since March, the Senior Center has doubled the number of days that it's open for its members from 2 to 4, Monday through Thursdays between 9 and 4. Liz Novak, president of Park City Senior Citizens, says they serve all seniors in the Park City area who pay the annual $5 membership, which provides an assortment of activities and twice weekly $3 lunches.
Our programs range from games and activities, Mahjong to bridge. We have exercise classes. We also offer art classes thanks to Kimball Arts Center. We have lectures. We're working with the Great Decisions Program through the Summit County Library. The list just goes on and on and on in terms of programs and activities.
Special one-time events include live music and opera and ballet performances, as well as weekly classes on wine education, senior self-defense, and guided meditation. Monthly events such as technology tutoring and opportunities to meet with elected officials are also offered. But with the growing membership, the 3,000-square-foot building on Woodside Avenue is quickly becoming too small.
It's an uphill battle, and we're working with Park City Municipal, and we appreciate the work of the Woodside 2 Committee. That's what we're calling the committee that's looking at developing and building a new senior center along with some affordable housing for seniors. We're anxious to put a shovel in the ground, but I think, you know, given all of the projects throughout the city, we recognize that the senior center is just one of many projects. And of course, you know, the age-old question, how do we fund a new senior center?
The goal is to build a 10,000-square-foot center with an additional 6,000 square feet of space to be shared with the rest of the community. The city has $3.5 million set aside, and the seniors are hoping that the county can pitch in as well, since most of the center's current members are from the Snyderville Basin. At this point, Novak says the committee is still working with developers who are interested in a public-private partnership and has no approved plans. As for adding an additional day of lunch, she says that they'll be asking the county council to fund that when its budget process begins next month.